You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. And welcome to episode 358. And in this one, I interview Jess, who has kindly agreed to share her story with us. And in particular, we talk about her themes of OCD, her earliest memory of OCD, religious obsessions, health obsessions, some of the difficult experiences that exacerbated her OCD, relationship obsessions, the different therapies she did, figuring out her identity, medication, using NoCD therapy, creating note cards as reminders for therapy, how Jess deals with rumination, and so much more. And thank you to NoCD for supporting the podcast. NoCD offers effective and convenient therapy available in the US and outside the US. To find out more about NoCD, their therapy plans, if they currently take your insurance, or to download their free app, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theOCDstories, or the link will be in the episode description. And thank you as always to you guys for listening. I deeply appreciate it. It always means a lot to me. And thank you to Jess for sharing her story. Without further ado, here she is. Welcome to the show, Jess.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. As you know, I'd love to hear your OCD story. So as little as much detail, it'd be good to hear that now.
Absolutely. Really happy to be here. And I really hope my story connects with a lot of people who may have had a lot of different OCD themes over the year, not just one, two, or three. So I'm someone who's kind of gone through almost, I mean, I'm sure there's an infinite number of different themes, but I've gone through a lot. So going back to the beginning, my mind has always been geared toward obsession. My first memory of something that probably was OCD was from when I was 4 years old. My family went to church, and I think I was four. I learned about the Christmas story. And looking back at this, I actually think this is really funny. But when I was a little kid, this wasn't very funny. So I learned that Mary had become pregnant from God, you know, with the baby Jesus. And I thought as a kid, if God can do it to Mary, he can do it to me. So I was actually obsessed that God was going to make me pregnant. So again, super funny, like looking back at it now as an adult, but this was something that caused like a fearful obsession for me as a little kid based on something I heard at church. And this really kind of paved the way for the main obsession I had throughout my childhood, adolescence, and early 20s, which was religious obsessions. And I remember, so I was in the evangelical Christian world. I was told, you know, everything in the Bible is literally true. And I was also taught things like, I remember a Bible school teacher telling me there's this literal place called heaven and hell. And she had showed me, maybe when I was 7 years old, a picture, like a cartoon of a place that's filled with fire, and it represented hell. And I was terrified. And so she said, you know, don't worry, all you have to do is pray a special prayer and you won't go to hell. So easy enough, right? But yeah. For a kid whose mind is geared toward OCD, I prayed that prayer every night for weeks, if not months, thinking I hadn't prayed it right. Maybe God hadn't really forgiven me for my sins. So prayer became a compulsion for me pretty young. Later, reading the Bible became an obsession, a compulsion as well. And I remember there was also a very specific night when I was probably 11, I was in middle school. And it really, I wasn't doing anything related to church, but it just dawned on me. I think I was watching a movie. It dawned on me that, oh, they're teaching me that people who aren't Christian are going to hell. And my dad's not Christian. So that must mean he's going to hell. And so that started one of the most, you know, longest lasting compulsions of my life, which was I prayed for my dad every night for years that he would be saved from hell, you know, that he'd become a Christian. And I really felt like that was somehow going to do something that would, you know, take away my uncertainty, my fear, and also literally help him in some way. So I kept doing it and I kept doing it. So I was receiving all these teachings in kind of this religious context where, you know, none of these religious teachers realized to what extent it was like a torture for me. Everything I was hearing was taken to the extreme in my mind. So when I got older, I decided to go to a Christian university, which I do think was a hard decision for me to make. But again, ruminated over it, really felt a little bit of guilt, that led me to think, you know, I shouldn't go to, say, an Ivy League school because that's too prideful. And I do think guilt can be an emotion that drives OCD alongside fear. So I ended up going to a Christian school. But when I was in college, I had all kinds of doubts about my religion and my beliefs. And at some point, this became really just constant. I was constantly thinking about, do I believe this? Is this true? How do I know my religion's the right religion? Who am I to think that I have the answers and so many other people in the world don't? And it made me miserable. It led to two episodes of pretty serious depression because really I was taught that faith should be the center of my life. And I should just have faith. It should be kind of easy, simple. But for me, it was nothing like that. It was really challenging to kind of wrap my mind around these concepts and really believe them without questioning them constantly. So backtracking a little bit into high school, OCD had also formed around some traumas that I had faced. When I was about 15, I had, out of nowhere, I got a blood clot, and it was in a vein kind of near my heart, something really serious and really rare for a teenager to have. And so that was the point that started health obsessions for me. I knew something was going on inside my body, but I couldn't see it. I couldn't understand it. And there were even doctors I talked to that didn't really understand it. So that made me more fearful. I knew that, you know, blood clots could break off and cause a pulmonary embolism. So every night that I was taking blood thinners, which was about 9 months, I was afraid I was going to die in the night from a pulmonary embolism. It was very scary for me as a teenager. But again, like I said, that really imprinted health obsessions for me, and rumination was my biggest compulsion. Another trauma from high school, my dad, who he had moved out of our home, you know, when I was much younger, but he, when I was a teenager, he actually lost his business and he became homeless. And he didn't have great relationships with a lot of his family, but he did have a good relationship with me. And I felt so much responsibility for him. But as a 17-year-old with no resources, there wasn't much I could do. But OCD said, well, you can ruminate about it. You can worry about it. You can pray about it compulsively. So that was something that was on my mind all the time because I was so worried about my dad. And so while I was still praying that he would not go to hell, I started also praying that he would get a home. And this was, you know, pretty traumatic for me. I was really mentally and emotionally burdened at a young age. So going back to being in college and, you know, faith had always been the center of my life and, sort of an outlet for me, but, the questioning continued and it really, I'd say peaked when I studied abroad. I chose to study abroad in Jerusalem, which is, I mean, amazing in many ways. I learned so much. I was exposed to just so many different cultures in one place, and that was incredible. But at the same time, I found myself, you know, amidst three large religions, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, and they all found this place really holy, really sacred. They had different groups within each religion, and they all had different views, different beliefs, and they thought their beliefs were right. And so this made me go, with all of these different views, why do I think my one view is the right way? So again, this really pushed me to constantly question and be like, this doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense. And try to study the Bible, religious texts, pray about it and really like maybe think that I'm going to come to the perfect like sense of certainty. Well, it definitely didn't happen. I did decide, you know, at that point, okay, there's always going to be uncertainty. I'll just try to have faith with the uncertainty. And for a while that worked for me. So I left, you know, this amazing, but really challenging experience of being in this rich, beautiful culture, mix of cultures in Jerusalem, went back to the USA with, you know, kind of like a determination to not try to figure it out anymore, which I think is great. And maybe that was my first, you know, foray into like ERP without knowing it. And I would say that, you know, I tried to like act out from my faith, act out of faith from there on. So after college, I actually worked for a Christian organization, but it still came back up. I was obsessing about this idea that the organization believed of, yeah, there's a heaven and a hell, and we have to kind of make everyone believe what we believe so that they don't go to hell. And I just, my brain had a big problem with that. It didn't make sense. It didn't add up. And I started really like looking for other viewpoints and started reading more and, you know, is this even clearly in the Bible? I kind of came to realize that it's not clearly stated. It's an interpretation, but, you know, people are welcome to believe it, but I chose to believe something a little more universalist where, okay, no, you don't have to believe exactly what I believe to be okay, to be loved by God or anything like that. So I really kind of moved away. I started to move away, I would say, from the really, you know, intense beliefs of just like one way, one belief system. And it started to just feel like there was, you know, where I was working, there was a lot of close-mindedness around me, sort of like an exceptionalism that their brand of faith was really the only way to live and believe. And at some point I just said, this isn't right for me anymore. I don't believe that anymore. And so, at the same time, I was having some relationship OCD with, the person I was dating. And again, I grew up in this really, religious culture that a big part of it was marriage was one of the most important parts of like, especially a woman's life. And, you know, I had sort of raised it to this on this pinnacle of like, this should be the most important thing and the person should be perfect, you know. And of course, like every other human, the person I was dating was far from perfect. And so I kept ruminating, like, is this the right relationship? Is this the wrong relationship? And making such a big deal of it that it was really causing distress for me. I was going to counseling at the time. It was not, I wasn't aware of OCD. It was not someone who was aware of OCD. So I started working through some trauma from, you know, my life. And honestly, that was one of the hardest times of my life because I think it was necessary to face some of the traumas I'd been through, pain I'd been through. But having it all come up while dealing with OCD was sort of just like a emotional mental explosion. That's the best way I can put it. So I was having all these things happen. This trauma was kind of being dealt with and coming up. And for the first time, I started having a different type of OCD, which was intrusive thoughts of harm, sexual thoughts that were disturbing to me. And so this was different because what I had ruminated and obsessed about in the past had been more related to things like church, something I was doing or a relationship I was in, but this seemed out of nowhere and it really scared me. So up until that point, and I was about 24, I had always thought that my kind of internal mental issues were more of a spiritual problem. It was my fault. I didn't have enough faith. It was usually that, but now I was like, what is this? This, you know, didn't seem to have to do with anything else in my life. And so this was the first time I finally Googled symptoms like many of us do at 24. And I, you know, learned what OCD was. Of course, that was one of the biggest milestones in my life to realize there's a name for this. It's not just me. This is, you know, this is an issue with my brain. And it's not a spiritual fault of mine. It's not that I'm bad. So that was a huge turning point for me because the struggle had a name. And actually, when I realized that, I started reflecting on my life and I was like, wow, every stage of my life, I've had some fearful obsession. And I could almost just go through and frame it like, oh yeah, when I was seven, it was this. When I was in middle school, it was this. And I realized that, okay, this thing called OCD has driven much of my life, which is a hard pill to swallow, but also an amazing relief to realize what's been going on. Mm-hmm. So I left that Christian organization. I was really depressed at the time. I was letting go of this old belief system. I was letting go of the community that surrounded that. I was dealing with this trauma that was coming up. It wasn't a fun time, but I was ready for a new chapter. So I applied to grad school and I was always a writer. So I decided to apply to an MFA in creative writing. And I applied to school back in Arizona, where I'm from. Leading up to getting accepted to school, I was really depressed. But once I got that letter that said, here's your next step, I felt a new sense of, okay, there's a life ahead of me. There's been a lot of pain. There's been a lot of confusion, but there's still a path for me forward. And so I experienced some hope. I was working with a new therapist. Again, this wasn't OCD therapy per se, but this was a therapist who truly cared about me. And I needed that person. I needed that person who wanted me to look at my life and say, you know, I am a good person. I'm not a bad person. I deserve love. And really build some of that self-worth, which I think was the necessary next step for me. So I was working with her for the first time, really accepting myself, my body, my sexuality, my humanness. Whereas in the past, I felt like I had to be this spiritual, perfect person. I let that go. And I, you know, I came to a point with faith where, you know, I said, I don't know if I believe in God, but if there is a God, God is love, pure love, and I have nothing to be afraid of. And once I got to that point, I just didn't have religious obsessions anymore. I moved away from like being very religious, although I did become interested in Buddhist meditation, which, you know, may or may not be considered religious, but I moved away from a really like psychological or philosophical view of religion and just had this like basic faith, like, hey, if it's true, it's all good. Like that God wouldn't be hateful and spiteful and want people to go to hell. So I experienced this sort of awakening while I was in grad school. And, you know, I knew that I had OCD. I was treating it with medication. I had let go of a lot of limiting beliefs in my life. I even fell in love with a woman for the first time and realized that I had a queer identity. But of course, that came with some of those same old things like relationship OCD, feeling conflicted. Is this the right person for me? Is this the wrong person for me? Is this the right relationship? You know, that was still there. And other issues of like worrying about money have always been an issue for me. So there were things I was obsessing about. But it was still one of the happiest times of my life because I finally didn't feel this sense of guilt and responsibility for every bad thing in the world and in my family and in my life. I really felt for the first time that I deserve to have a life and to be happy. And so ultimately broke up with that first girlfriend, but it was an amazing like experience of really saying like, it's okay to, you know, live the life I'm meant to live, even if it's not the story I was told growing up. And, you know, having an identity as someone who's queer and bisexual, you know, that was freeing and that is freeing. But at the same time, OCD is like, hey, there's two choices here. So if I'm dating a man, I might think, oh, maybe I'd be happier with a woman. And I'm going to ruminate about that. If I'm dating a woman, it's like, maybe I'd be happier with a man. And there's like a lot of room for OCD to kind of get its claws in there. So there is you know, sexual orientation OCD for people who aren't straight. So maybe that connects with someone else out there. But all this time, I had not seen an OCD specialist a therapist who really knew about ERP. I had never done that. And so I was dealing mostly using medication, which did and does help me. But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't remove the problem. It just helps for me. And I'd still get down the rabbit hole with different obsessions. And at one point, health obsessions came back for me pretty strong. So I'd been reading all these things. I was having these symptoms where I'm like, I'm not sure what's going on with my body. But I became convinced that I should stop using pharmaceuticals entirely, and that that was the healthiest thing for me to do. And so I went off of my medication. I was really kind of obsessing about like different fad diets that could help me feel better. And, you know, at the same time, my dad still struggled with homelessness. He had for years, and ultimately he developed dementia. And so I had all these things that I was still obsessing about, and I didn't have a lot of tools to deal with it. And so, you know, looking back, the choice to go off medication, it really wasn't the best for me, but I didn't know that at the time. It really took when my dad, you know, began progressing in his illness, my sister, thankfully, was able to get him to a care facility for people with dementia. I was really comforted knowing he had a place to live. He had these nurses and aides around him who cared about him, really loved him. And he was able to connect with me there. My half-sister came and flew out from New York to see him. And it had been years, their relationship had been strained, but there was like this healing and this, there was like a lot of beauty actually at the end of my dad's life. And he did pass, and I actually was the person who, you know, kind of put together the funeral. It was a small celebration of life and of reflection, because my dad's life had been a challenge in many ways. And he struggled with mental illness, but never got diagnosed, never got treated. And really for me, reflecting on that, I was like, I don't want to make those same choices my dad did as far as ignoring mental health. So I went back on my medication. I said, you know what? Sure, medication may have its downsides, but also not treating mental illness, this is what it can lead to. A life of mental illness, a life of strained relationships. And so I made a choice at that point. Like, I'm really going to take care of this in the way that I see fit. And that commitment really helped me. The medication did help me. I kind of got to a better place. I was able to get a job as a manager at a tech company, something I never imagined myself doing as like an introverted writer, managing people, but I'm actually still doing that now. I got into a committed partnership with my wonderful girlfriend that I have now. So being at a place where I'm really like owning, hey, my family has mental health issues. I'm going to treat that and I'm going to do my best because I want to live the best life possible and have good relationships and keep those relationships and move toward the things I love. I did start using the app NoCD about a year ago. I had dealt with OCD for probably 3 decades before I finally started exploring ERP. So that's a long time. But I've worked with NoCD therapists and have really developed some strategies for, you know, dealing with the specific themes that come up, how to respond when I'm triggered, which, hey, it happens a lot still. But what's different for me now is in the past, if I started to have, say, an obsession about what do I believe, you know, faith, what do I believe, that could go on for months and lead to serious depression. Now, you know, I'll get triggered, but it might be a week, right? It might be a week of dealing with this theme. It might come back later, but it's not kind of embedding itself into my life in the same way. I still have OCD. And, you know, even this past week, I was dealing with health OCD. I got some new symptoms, didn't know what they were. That freaks me out. Someone who's had a blood clot. I ended up going to the doctor, getting tested. I'm fine. It's not to say that it was wrong to go get tested for these symptoms. It may have been actually the right thing to do, but I was obsessing about it. So that's still very much part of my life, but I feel like I really have new tools and it's going to come up. I'm going to get different themes. It could be health. I recently had existential OCD, which I do not like that one. That one sucks. all kinds of things. But right now, you know, I've worked with this ERP therapist who's really shown me like the goal is to live in the present moment. Don't obsess about the past, the future, hypotheticals. Be present to your environment, your circumstances. Be accepting of them. Find joy where you are. And, you know, that's my goal. And every day I have to apply that. I do want to kind of share one thing that I've done to integrate the ERP. I've made these note cards. Okay, and so some of the like just little exercises I can do to face like a trigger. When it comes up, I'll pull out my note cards and just pull a random one and see what it says and try and do what it says. So for instance, Stu, if you want to point to a card, let's pretend you're pulling a card.
That one that says 48 on it.
Okay, great. So this one says, when triggered or flooded with thoughts, give yourself 48 hours. Don't act on those thoughts during that time. Let it pass. So if I got triggered, something the NoCD therapist gave me that was really helpful was like, do not give those thoughts credit. They'll be happening. They'll be flooding your mind, but don't act on them for those 48 hours. See where you land after that. So that's one of my cards.
I like that. What about another one? Maybe pick another one. Cool. You can pick this time.
Okay. Let's see. One of them's do the opposite action. So you've probably heard that. You know, whatever you're feeling, whatever the urges you're having with OCD, do the opposite. Like if I'm feeling like I need to get in bed, isolate, and do some research on my phone, how about go out and meet with some people and do the opposite of that?
Yeah, I like it. I like it. So you carry these around with you?
They're usually kind of like near my bed, but that's a great idea, Stu. Thank you. I should just carry them everywhere.
Yeah. You almost need an app on your phone that like randomizes it and you can just there you go. There's a business idea if anyone wants to get
very fair.
Thank you for sharing your story and going into so much detail, and it's interesting to see how, you know, there were some big traumas, you know, in your teenage years, and how that clearly then impacts certain themes that you have, and understandably why you're even those themes are even more charged than maybe some of your other themes. So it's good that you've done the trauma stuff. And I like what you said about working on my self-esteem. I think you said was like the next logical step. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, do you think it would have been harder to do ERP without having done that step or not?
I think for me, it would have been. I don't think it's, you know, impossible, but I really was at a place where I didn't have a lot of self-worth. I'd really let the guilt of religion and how I'd interpreted it in my head get to me and make me feel like I wasn't the best person. So I really needed just a baseline of like, hey, I'm okay. I'm good enough. I deserve to be happy before I could, implement other types of therapy.
Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant. And do you find in your job that OCD comes up and bothers you, or is that kind of more of a safe space?
Yeah, that's a great question. It does come up at times, and especially working with people, right? I think that there are times where, you know, problems get complex in organizations. And sometimes I think I can figure it all out. Maybe I'll just get into my journal and start like diagramming things. It's not necessary. It's not like I'm the CEO here. and I have to remind myself like, hey, just like cool it. With all of the, you know, people management, it's easy to kind of obsess about what's the best thing for the team or this person or for me? I'd say in many ways it is a safe space because it's not as triggering. It's not like related to my trauma, but it can still lead to some obsession.
Okay. Fair enough. And sort of mental compulsions, how do you deal with those?
Yeah. A lot of my compulsions have been mental. I mean, really a lot of rumination. That's kind of... my therapist said, you know, you live in your head a lot, which is true. So some of that is just trying to get into the body, whether that is like a body scan meditation or just going outside, going on a walk or being active, exercising. It's really important for me to shift from like that, all of like my mental energy, just being, well, all of my energy, I guess I should say, being confined to like my brain and trying to like get my energy into my body.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. And so you're obviously in a committed relationship now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Are you still getting the same sort of worries come up around your partner?
Is that sometimes? Yeah. It's popped up. Luckily, it hasn't been like there constantly. I think sometimes when I'm extra stressed, or I actually also find that if I'm dealing with something else physically in my body, say like I get really bad allergies. So like seasonal allergies, if those are worse, like my OCD might be worse just because I guess the body is a little bit more overloaded or stimulated. I don't know. So sometimes they will pop up. But at the same time, like I know that this person I'm with is really wonderful. So, and in a way that she is so supportive of me that, you know, I feel a good sense of security with her.
Yeah. Good, good. Yeah. What else am I curious about? So you said 4 years old was the earliest. You had that Christmas intrusion, right?
With
what did your family around you think? Did you share with them, or did you kind of keep it inside?
You know, I don't think I shared too much with my family ever. Mm. Like, I'm sure it came out in some ways at different times when I was looking for reassurance, which has been a compulsion for me as well. There might have been ways that I kind of looked for reassurance, but honestly, I wasn't, throughout my childhood, I wasn't like telling someone in my family, like, hey, I'm having this problem. I didn't really feel that confidence to do it. I really felt like it was my problem to deal with.
Yeah. It's really hard for young kids. I mean, it's changing now. Young kids seem to be way more confident. And maybe that's just because there's so much more media on mental health. So it's less stigmatized and scary. And
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of destigmatizing mental health. And even at work, I have made sure to talk about mental health. We work with students. So a lot of our students are going through mental health issues. And so I wanted to make sure that we're providing like accessible accommodations for those who need them. And just talking about it, because yeah, it's so common to have, you know, different mental health struggles at different times in your life. It's very human.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And do you share that you have OCD, or do you keep it more generic when you,
I've shared more like one-on-one with people. Okay, I haven't really like advertised that, I would say, but yeah, if it comes up or it makes sense to share with individuals, sure.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Over the years, has there been like a light bulb moment around either how you see OCD or the kind of treatment for it, where something just kind of clicked for you?
Yeah, I feel like there have been a number of light bulb moments. But the big one I shared was when I first just like knew what it was, that it existed. You know, the internet has, you know, its rabbit holes, but it's also like a miracle for many of us with OCD. I think a lot of people can relate to that. It's like, okay, I'm not alone. I'm not crazy. But let's see, any other light bulb moments and how I see it. I'm sure there have been. I would say maybe just realizing that part of it is, you know, accepting thoughts. Because I think at some point I thought, okay, OCD, just like try not to have those thoughts, like get rid of them. They're not good. They're not helpful. But sometimes it's not going to work. So what do you do when you just need to like, hey, accept you're having a trigger? I think that's been big for me. And it's still hard for me to accept because there's that perfectionism of like, just wipe it out. But that's not how it works. So how do you live with the messiness and the uncertainty and the doubts and still focus on what really matters, what I really value?
Yeah. Yeah, really good point. And is that something you keep in mind of like when you're having hard days, like what's important to me? What do I value? How can I move towards that?
Totally. Like I try and reflect on, okay, what are my values? And in all of this mental chaos that can happen, what can I do to walk toward those values and really just simplify it? Because, you know, I think there are just a few things that really matter to me. And OCD can clamp onto anything. And it's like, hey, at the end of the day, that may not be so important. What's important is relationships, love, you know, social justice may be important for some people. It is for me. Nature, just being in nature and celebrating it. You know, what are those basic things?
Yeah, I like that. Absolutely. Okay, so you know, words of hope for anyone listening, what would you tell them?
Yeah, I would say if you run the gamut like I do and your mind just goes to any OCD theme and sometimes you're surprised by it, maybe disheartened because you got a new one and you're constantly jumping, you're not alone. I've had that. And I think that there's, you know, it's all OCD. And so a lot of the responses can be the same regardless of what the theme is. And so a lot of the practices, whether ERP or just whatever you come up with, if you have a set of note cards to help when you're triggered, all of those can be helpful regardless of the theme. And if it's new or if it's scary, it's all OCD.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. And yeah, you could pick up the phone and call the 20-year-old Jess. What do you tell her?
Yeah, for sure. I'd say, hey, you have OCD. So I'd give her that like extra 4 years of warning and save some definite pain. What would I tell her? I think I'd also really emphasize that point of self-worth and that you are a good person. You deserve to have your own life and be happy. And it's not just about, you know, pleasing other people, doing what you've been told to do, helping others. Those are, you know, helping others is wonderful, but you deserve to be happy as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Good phone call. And you've got a billboard. Do you want written on that?
Oh, I wish I had thought about this one before. What would I don't know. Maybe something like mental health is for everyone. Something that really normalizes the need to take care of our mental health, regardless of if we have a diagnosis, don't have a diagnosis. We all need to take care of our mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. Really good point. And then lastly, anything else you wish you could have said or shared today?
Great question. I feel like I shared a lot of my story, but something just to go back on is I think OCD works with emotions like fear, but also guilt. And maybe that's one that we forget about. And it can make you feel really responsible, sometimes like a bad person. And just to realize, hey, that is OCD. And to acknowledge it as not being true. It's not true. We're not bad people for the thoughts we have or the ideas that OCD gives us.
Yeah, I love that. Absolutely. Well, look, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's been great to hear it.
Yeah, I really appreciate you having me on the podcast.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. And if you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.